on the latest edition of the Cubs Recap Podcast, available on our Recap YouTube channel and available audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcasts. My partner, Gordon Whitmire, and I take some more listener questions. We talk about the Jameson Taillon injury and how the Cubs could fix that hole. And we even answer who might have the best career of four of the Cubs' best minor league prospects. Welcome into another episode of our Cubs Recap Podcast here on our Recap YouTube channel and available audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcasts with my partner, Gordon Whitmire. I'm David Kaplan. Okay, Gordon, before we get into some more listener questions and viewer questions, Jameson Taillon's going to probably start the season on the IL. He had a back issue as he was warming up for his first start of the spring.
Yeah.
Still got Blake Snell out there. You still have Jordan Montgomery out there. We just saw Dylan Cease get moved to the Padres. So there's always guys out there to be had. Are you at all, from a Cubs perspective, looking at them and going, they should be concerned about the depth of their rotation?
Thanks for putting that on a tee for me, Cap, because anybody listening to this should go to the website. Tell me again what that website is, Cap.
TheCapMan.com. And Gordon's latest column is Tom Ricketts, get your checkbook out and go get a pitcher.
Exactly. Look, their top four, you kind of liked the baseline that their top four offered you, right? Which was Justin Steele, Kyle Hendricks, Imanaga, and then Jameson Taillon. Now, Jameson Taillon did not have a good year last year, but you figured that he'd be back to some semblance of what he's been in his career in this second year with the club. And now he's an injury issue. He hadn't even pitched until that day that he was on the mound warming up and his back locked up. So he
gets scratched. He'd been doing all his work on the side.
Yeah, which kind of makes you wonder a little bit already. And then backs are tricky, man. We see that. Look at Rizzo. His back just kept cropping up every year, sometimes for a couple days, sometimes for a week. And so you don't know how this is going to play out. And after that, you had young guys, and Jordan Wicks looked as good as any of them, and it looked like he might be the guy. And now you've got to rely on, if he is the guy that was going to be the fifth starter, now he's got to be the fourth starter. Now you're looking at Wisniewski, Assad, maybe Drew Smyly, who we saw last year didn't really perform well. And yeah, he's at least a big question mark. I don't know what I think of my last two spots in that rotation if I'm the Cubs. And man, I tell you, go read that column. Internally, they discuss these types of things all the time, right? They're around the luxury tax threshold.
As we speak, pulling up where the Chicago Cubs are in terms of total salary. Their payroll total right now, projected total payroll, is $220.8 million.
Is this Spotrac?
This is Spotrac, yeah.
Okay, so that's the luxury tax total line?
Competitive, let me see. Estimated tax payroll will be including active and estimated arbitration and pre-arbitration, 230.6.
Now, I don't know if they've added the estimate for benefits, but that's typically 15 million plus. And then you've got the things that there's no way they've added. And that's things like bonus clauses, incentives, roster churn, like a guy goes on the IL and you go bring up a guy and now all of a sudden he's making the minimum for X amount of time, or maybe it's a guy that's got a split contract in the minors and you bring him up and now he's going to make the major league portion of that. The roster churn will add some payroll to that. And so I've seen estimates that suggest they could be in jeopardy of tiptoeing over that line. Well, this is the thing they talk about all the time. You don't want to tiptoe over that line. You're a big revenue team. You can go into the luxury tax if you want. But if you're going to do it, do it in a way that's going to definitely help your team. Do it in a way that's going to be, if you're going to go over by a dollar, you might as well go over by several million and get a guy you need.
Completely agree with you. If you're going to go over the tax, I'm not telling you got to go to 300 million, but if you're going to go over to, it's 237 is the first baseline.
Right.
If you're going to go to 239, then go to 250.
Go get the guy you need to put your foot on the throat of the division. Make sure you get to the playoffs. Make sure you have a chance to win at least a series in the playoffs. And that's where they're at right now. And when you see something like Jameson Taillon happen, it's not that that's going to necessarily derail your season or knock you out of a chance to get to the playoffs, especially in this division. But what it is a reminder of just how fragile your depth is. They don't, as soon as he's out, you're going to Drew Smyly and a bunch of kids. And they've got other positions like that. They don't even have a third baseman. I mean, that's where we're at, right? Their third baseman is Christopher Morel. And you're praying that the club plays well enough over the course of the season to justify that. And as I wrote in a column, the third base situation is not going to win or lose you to the division, but pitching will.
Starting pitching is.
And so that's the point. There are guys out there. If there was nobody out there, then okay, roll the dice. But there's guys out there, and this is where you are financially. Go get the guy. Now, Blake Snell, he'll cost you a draft position and all that because he's got a qualifying offer. Jordan Montgomery doesn't. Go get him. And he'll probably, I mean, they're both the same agent, but there's a case to be made, I would think, that Jordan Montgomery might not cost as much as Blake Snell, a two-time Cy Young winner, who just won the Cy Young last year. So go try to get Jordan Montgomery. You don't have to pay pay Jason Hayward money or anything, but just don't get beat, right? Just don't get beat for him. Go compete for him and try to get him. And all of a sudden now, what does that rotation look like? It looks like a lot of lefties, but beyond that, it looks really good. You like what you can count on in that rotation if you've got him in there. This guy pitched in a World Series last year and won a ring.
I'm looking at his numbers. In 2023, between St. Louis and Texas, he pitched in 32 games. He went 10-11. ERA in Texas was better than it was in St. Louis. It was 2.79. It was 3.42 in St. Louis. 2022, he had some issues health-wise. He only pitched in... No, take that back. He pitched in 32 games between the two.
Yeah.
He pitched in 30 games with the Yankees in 21. He pitched in the COVID year. We throw that out. 2019, he had just gotten to the Yankees big league rotation and he got injured. So
let me throw one thing at you, Cap. I think you've started to say what my case is. Mm-hmm. This guy has like a 3.68 career ERA. It's 3.48 the last 3 years when he's making an average of 30-something starts a year. This guy is trending exactly where you would want him if you were to go get him now and plug him into a rotation.
Okay, so that leads us to Tyler Campbell's question. Where does Ben Brown and Cade Horton fit into the 2024 plan? Neither one is going to make the opening day roster. I do think there's a chance that those guys get to the big leagues this year, but they got to get off to good starts.
Yeah, and what you're hoping for if you're the Cubs is that they're debuting in September. Because, and again, the rosters don't expand like they used to, but they expand a little bit. That means they're pitching well and they've earned a promotion. And it also probably means you have the luxury of plugging those guys in for some innings down the stretch because your team's in good position. That's what you'd like. What you hope isn't the case, but it might not be a worst case scenario, is if you're in July or August, and Cade Horton, for instance, is dominating, and you need a guy, so you bring him up and you try to ride the wave. Again, it might not be the worst case scenario, but it might not be the best case scenario for where your team might be at that point.
Okay, Nathan Curtis says, who is the most important first or second year player to the Cubs' success? First or second year player? I don't think it's Pete Crow Armstrong because he's opening the season in the minors.
Yeah.
I think if you give me a...
It's none of the hitters.
It's probably got to be Jordan Wicks.
It's probably Jordan Wicks. I mean, really, it's probably a debate between Jordan Wicks and Michael Bush. But I think the pitching being as important as it is, and Jordan Wicks, except for his last start last year, showing you what he did when he got an opportunity, he's got a chance to have a real impact on this club in a way that's going to directly impact an opportunity to win every 5 days in a way that, you know, Bush may or may not. And even if he has a big year, that doesn't go as far for you as Jordan Wicks having a big year. So I would say Wicks.
Yeah, because Matt Shaw's not going to open the season with the big league club, even though he's had a really good spring.
And when he gets there, it means that you failed at third base with the mix you have now.
Correct. And Christopher Morel is, while he didn't start with the big league club last year, I don't look at him as a first or second year style guy, even though the body of work, if you added up the number of games. Steve at Chi-Town Sports asked about Montgomery or Snell. If they don't go that way, who else is out there, or what could they do if Tyone is on the shelf?
I'll give you a name, and he might be off the board if they don't ask fast or go into look at this fast. Look, they've got left-handers already, right? If Wicks is in the mix, you've still got three left-handers in the rotation in the top four. So to go add another one.
Yeah, Steele, Imanaga, and Wicks.
Right. So left-handedness might not be your ideal scenario. But he's a really good, he's maybe the best fit in a number of ways to go get him. But here's another name, Michael Lorenzen. He's still out there. And supposedly the Yankees are looking at him. They've got Gerrit Cole on the shelf, and they've got some serious problems there.
And they tried to get Dylan Cease, but they would not part with their top prospect, Spencer Jones.
Right. And so this would be a less costly and shorter term, I would assume, proposition. And he's a right-hander. He's not overpowering, but he figured out a lot of things last year as a full-time starter for Detroit before he got traded at the deadline. He'd be a nice right-hander at a back end of a rotation, coming off a pretty good season. And then if Tyone comes back, if you like some of these younger guys instead, or if he's not quite getting the job done or pitching as many innings as you like, he's got tons of experience in the bullpen. And this guy has playoff experience too. So I like it. Plus he's an athlete. I don't know if you remember him over the years against the Cubs. I mean, he would hit, he could hit. So I don't know that you need that in this day and age of the DH, but it's just another little wrinkle. But there's a name right there that could be a lower cost, lower commitment for years.
Okay, so what do they do if Jameson Taillon's going to miss at least a month? I don't think he is, but what do they do if that ends up being the case? Because back injuries are tricky, A. B, you're pitching him in cold weather with a back situation. They go, and they could say all they want to me, look, he's only going to miss, you know, four starts, three starts, whatever the number is. Yeah, I've heard that same bullshit over the last 15 years covering this team when, that guy was wearing flip-flops and his heel is bothering him. It turned out it was his godforsaken elbow, Mark Pryor, to this guy, to that guy. You never get shot straight that this guy's going to be out. All of a sudden, it's May 26th and the guy's finally coming back.
Yeah, what you can't do with an injury is assume best case scenario. You have to prepare for the other end of the spectrum. And so again, this doesn't look like back surgery or the season, but yeah, you're right. It could be 6 weeks into the season. It could be a month into the season. And here's the other thing, Cap, that we didn't talk about. They don't just need five starters. They need a sixth guy that they can go to on occasion, because Imanaga's coming in from Japan where he had he pitched every 6 days, not 5 days. And so this is something the council has talked about, that not that they would go to a six-man rotation, but they would identify some guys or some maybe some bullpen days when they could give extra rest, maybe a spot start here and there, a sixth guy. So that's where you're at as the season opens. They've got three off days in the first 15 days of the season, but one of them's the classic day after opening day. They're going to need at least a fifth starter. I want to say,
well, you got Drew Smyly there. You got twice, Assad.
You're still going to need him at least, I think it's once in the first 8 days. You might be able to get away with it, like not having a guy, but you're still going to need a fifth starter twice in the first 10 days, even if you try to use the off days. It's at least a bit of a calculus here on the games and the innings and the starts. If he's out longer, again, you know, Wicks is going to be your four guy maybe, and then you got Smyly, and is he a 5-6 inning guy? Is he a 4 inning guy sometimes? What does that mean? And early in the season is you just mentioned it. You got cold weather, plus guys aren't in midseason form.
So you mentioned Michael Lorenzen. You mentioned, and we talked about Snell and Montgomery. How long does Snell sit on the market in your opinion? Because I don't think the Yankees give a flying rip about a draft pick. If Gerrit Cole's out 1 to 2 months at least, they can't get a deal done for Dylan Cease. At some point, they're going to have to step up and just write a check and go, all right, whatever it costs us in luxury tax or compensation pick, they can't flush a season in New York.
No. And you know, from the
New York, I don't think the Cubs are going down that road.
From the Yankees standpoint, we know why Dylan Cease made sense, right? Another year at club control, and there's some cost certainty somewhat in there. And he's still a young guy and all that. Lorenzen, we know why Lorenzen makes sense, because you can get him probably on a short-term deal. You can get him to sort of cover your needs right now without it being this commitment like you gave Carlos Rodon. And 6-year, what was that, $120 million, $162 million.
Correct.
Going in last year, and he didn't pitch for you. And boy, all eyes are on him right now because they need him bad. So you're going to go make another big investment on a guy, be it a Blake Snell or even a Jordan Montgomery, and then where does he slot if Rodon's good, if Gerrit Cole comes back, and you know, long term, where are you at? And then, you know, how many luxury tax thresholds you're gonna blow through, even if you're the Yankees. That's why Cease and Lorenzen made sense. I don't know how long Snell stays out there. There is the with the qualifying offer, I want to go back to when the Cubs signed Craig Kimbrell. Mm-hmm. They did it late enough in
the season. They didn't give up a draft pick.
They didn't give up the draft pick because he put in that, you know, he bided that time. And then, but I believe that relates, if I'm not mistaken, it relates to the draft, and the draft is later now. So that's going to come into, that could come into play big time. He's going to have to accept at least, I would think, you know, unless, you know, Boris has said that other teams have started showing interest, unless they're getting some competitive offers against one another, you know, he's probably going to have to take something short term just to get himself pitching.
All right. Next one is from David Pilar. And he said, do we trust Adbert Alzolay as the closer going into the season? I would answer it this way. He's going to get every chance to keep his gig as the closer, but Hector Neris comes in and has really good stuff. He has a closer mentality. He would probably be a guy they would consider using there. But right now, I think it's Alzolay's gig to lose.
I would agree with that. I also think that we saw this for sure with Rossi. And Council had the luxury of Devin Williams and Josh Hader in recent years. So he didn't have to make these kinds of decisions. But they've got between Alzolay, Neris, and a couple of the other guys in that bullpen, if somebody's performing real well, if somebody's locked down for a stretch, that could be your closer for a month. And so do we trust Alzolay? I don't know. We should be able to at this point in his career. He seemed to have some things figured out last year.
He did.
And that should at this point in his career, that should be able to carry into this year. We should be able to trust him. But if we can't, I think they've done a better job than they did last year of at least having some backup plans to that. So I think that it's less of an urgent question than it might have been a year ago if you were asking, well, who's this team's closer if they're in contention? Because that became an issue.
Okay, but I cannot I shouldn't say this. I can't believe that they won't add on to the bullpen this year if they're as close as they were last year.
Well, fair? Keep in mind. Yeah, but keep in mind, like last year, there were some high, high prices out there. Teams paid high prices for some of the relievers they went and got.
But Gordon, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear them go, well, we would have had to give up our fifth best prospect. I don't give a flying rip.
Well, that's which is it? Like,
you fell one game short, goddammit.
I'm with you on that. And here, so you got to do one or the other. You got to either go out and spend the money. And as Theo had said at least a couple of times, the good thing about free agency is it's only money.
Correct.
So go spend the money. You're the freaking Cubs. Or if you're not going to spend the money, then isn't that why you tanked and built your farm system up?
Correct. Not all these guys are going to play in Chicago.
But we hear it out of both sides of their mouth, Cap. We've heard it for years out of both sides of their mouth. And that's the problem. So they'll get to the deadline and guys will be out there. And like last year, the prices will be high and they won't get Sam Moll. The Cincinnati friggin' Reds will get him because the Cincinnati Reds will give up Joe Boyle, who's probably going to be in the A's rotation this year. He looked really good when he debuted last year. A starting pitching prospect who was ready to go for the A's down the stretch. That's what it took to get Sam Moll, a lefty that the Cubs want. Instead, they get Quas, right? So you tell me what they're going to do.
You pay for.
Yes, yes. I don't trust him to go out and get the Aroldis Chapman that's out there available this time. Now, that was a situation where they were on the way to 100 wins, and they knew they had a chance to win the whole thing. But I think this year, if you're playing well and you got a chance to win that division, I think you have to go for it, if not quite Aroldis Chapman level, at least high level. You got to be serious and fill your holes.
Well, here's my question, and I'll wrap it up here with you. If you are spending $230 million, we'll call it $231 with all your stuff, then if you're not trying to freaking win at the deadline and you're going to start your team shorthanded, then why don't you spend $150 million and just say we're not ready to win?
You're talking my language. You better be effing trying to win if you're spending $230. You can't miss the fucking playoffs, the effing playoffs. If you're spending $230 million,
completely
you can't.
Agree. It'd be like having a shitty house, and my wife goes, "Hey, you know what? Why don't we repaint all the walls?" I'm like, "Hun, the water's pouring in through the walls. Why don't we get the freaking house fixed first?"
Or how about this? You think you've built a good foundation? You've got good bones in the house. It's a nice house on the whole, but you decide to go with the shitty old roof.
Yeah, let's go.
Fix the roof.
It's enough now. It's time to freaking win the division. Let's go.
That's why I say you should address. There are things right now that you can foresee, and there's ways to address them, and I think you should. I think that's how they should be looking at this.
Last one. I'll ask you this real quick. Andrew Drake says, which prospect do you think will end up when his career is over being the best one? Matt Shaw, PCA, Cade Horton, or Owen Casey? And I'll tell you, I believe it's Matt Shaw.
Wow. That is a great question.
I would rank it this way. Matt Shaw, Cade Horton, 1-2, 2-1, close. Right there. and PCA would be fourth on that list for me.
Yeah, I would go.
And that doesn't mean not a good player.
I'd go Cade Horton first. I like I like where he's at.
Yeah, I'm right there now. 1-2-2-1.
And then I might even put Owen Casey a little bit ahead of Shaw. And I'm with you on right now until PCA shows me more as a big league bat. I'm with you on him being fourth. But I like Cade Horton as a guy that, you know, barring some kind of big injury, has a chance to really make an impact as much or more than any of those guys.
Gordon, have a wonderful rest of your day and enjoy Arizona, man. Send some warm weather. It's a little gray and chilly here today.
I'll give it my best.
All right. That's my guy. That's Gordon Whitmire, my partner here on the Cubs Recap Podcast. Send your questions always. He's at GWMLB. I'm at The Capman on Twitter, and read Gordon's weekly column, thecapman.com, and you'll get some great perspectives from a veteran baseball scribe. For Gordon, I'm Cap. We'll see you next time on the Cubs Recap Podcast. Take that.